Thank you very much.
3839.
Never down on these damn calling mechanisms, so damn it, don't confuse it.
Yeah, don't you?
Yeah.
Now I'm the writer tonight.
When I came home tonight, I looked at the arc lights shining down on the tree, and I just wished I could go into that damn place that's rented out where someone else owns that woodwork that I used to love. They're not even there to look at it. Right up above. Meredith, are you winding up something or are you going to play something? I can't hear anything. I don't know whether I'm drunk or whether it's not coming.
I've never seen Jude hide before. He's good when he does hide.
You said that to me, Nelson. Go, you can't say that to June, too.
Well, she really is cute and not,
She's cute before she's drunk, too.
Oh, she's right for drunk, so.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm so saturated with liquor, I can't even get high anymore. I don't.
I wish there was more, though. I'd like to see what my capacity really is.
I'll be for a day.
You know, I drink the cups.
Got it?
Meredith, I'm supposed to one.
I really am so tired.
You'd like?
You don't mind matches?
Huh?
Wouldn't be so much fun.
Ooh, no.
You don't like it.
I really.
Let's go down to the townhouse. That's real close.
Oh, that'd be as well as fun.
Oh, yeah.
That's townhouse.
That's better than townhouse.
Don't you have neighbors?
Neighbors? What are neighbors? They are to be insulted. Come, let's go on in.
Let's go on and insult them.
I really can, yeah.
Wait a minute, wait a minute.
Oh. I'm really so tired.
I'm tempted to speak.
That's very tempting. More tempting to go, but. I gotta get up in the morning. I gotta get up. I have to get up. Wasn't it last night that we went to?
I don't have any garlic.
Oh, I thought I got up.
I've just got raw garlic.
Seven this morning. I only had three nights.
I have about 7 cloves of raw garlic.
Oh, give it to your dog.
Give it to your dog, one at a time.
No, seriously, don't do it.
I just really can't. I'm,
Well, I know if you're really gassed, I know how you feel because I've been there.
Oh, apple into ant, beard into barn, clock into cake, and dust into dog, egg into elephant, fingers into fields, geese into gramophones, hills into hollows, ice into isotopes, jugs into jaguars, kings into kindnesses, lanes into lattices, moons into meanwhiles, nears into nevers, orphans into otherwises, pegs into pillows. Unspeaking available zones. American idiom, which I think is best expressed in jazz music.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. You know, Kenneth, in the minds of many people, I think that poetry with jazz is kind of associated with the San Francisco scene. How come your name has never been linked to this?
Well, it's a very long story. Mostly it's through strenuous effort on my part. Just like to say parenthetically that my own opinion is that although not as old as the dodo, the San Francisco scene is happily as dead. And it only existed in the minds of New York advertising writers who I think had in mind some sort of intellectual rock and roll. A bad choice because the beat generation hasn't enough energy to either rock or roll. I was invited to read at the Brussels Fair.
I think that's terribly exciting. Aren't you excited about it?
I'm quite thrilled by the opportunity to give my work to an audience of that scope, because while at the fair I expect to read in Stockholm, London, Paris, and so on. Lonesome Boy Blues. Thank you.
radiologist and isotope worker is working much safer, much closer to this safety level than the general population should ever be forced to go. Shields Warren's data in Boston indicate that radiologists have something like 6 times the incidence of leukemia and high incidence of cancer and other degenerative diseases of old age, much greater than the general population. Their children have about 1.5 times the number of malformations and other things which would indicate the possibility of genetic damage in this population also. So again, it isn't logical to compare the concentration, the average concentration in the child population with the maximum permissible dose in the occupational radiation worker.
However, this is essentially what the Atomic Energy Commission and other groups are doing in trying to define the how far we can go in increasing the strontium 90 content, correct?
Unfortunately, this seems to be true, and I am now publishing a note to try and call attention to this error in calculation.
Well, now, is all of this data available to the Atomic Energy Commission, the material that you have studied?
It comes directly from their work, yes.
Can you explain why they haven't come to these same conclusions that you seem to have arrived at right here?
Well, this is difficult to see. It's a logical error to fall into, I think. You have this Bureau of Standards figure, and if you take it without much further thought, it would be the logical thing to compare with. And you must remember that many of the people here are basically physicists working on problems of reactor structure and things of this nature, and haven't given perhaps all the consideration to the biological aspects that they might have. You're probably also aware that many scientists across the face of the globe are aware of these difficulties. There are a group in Germany and England which have been rather outspoken in their beliefs that we are rapidly approaching a critical level in fallout for the general population.
Well, what I'm wondering, is it possible that the AEC or that the government might be interested in keeping these facts from the public? Has that possibility occurred to you or not?
I doubt this very much. I don't think that there is anyone there who has anything against the public. I don't think that they're withholding data. I think probably they're just a little bit slow in getting it out. After all, there's a certain amount of red tape in getting all these things together and getting them published. Mm-hmm. I have some data in my own lab that's been sitting here for 5 years, and I'm still trying to get it out.
Well, now, the AEC seems to be engaged right now, this is my impression, in a sort of nationwide publicity campaign educating the public on these problems. One of their commission members, Dr. W.F. Libby, is speaking in many places around the country, and the tone of the AEC pronouncement seems to be that fallout is not that dangerous a thing. We have quite a ways to go before we reach the danger point. Why do you suppose they're engaged in this? This seems to differ very strongly from your conclusions.
Well, I haven't heard Dr. Libby, and I don't wish to comment on this until I really have his information at hand. But from his published articles, he is the one that I mentioned quite specifically, has been comparing population means with the maximum permissible concentration, which, as I've described in detail, is a view that I can't go along with. Some of the news reports seem to indicate that internal radiation of this type is also being compared with external radiation. This, of course, is a very different matter and goes into different units. It's a very difficult comparison to make, and one that is fraught with all sorts of uncertainties.
I understand the AEC is financing a part of your studies here. Is that correct?
That is true.
Did they expect you to reach the conclusion you did?
No, they did not.
Did they expect you to reach the other conclusion?
No, they have not asked for any conclusion except our honest experimental results. No, they have not tried to influence us in any way.
You don't think they'll feel bad about the conclusions you've reached?
Well, I trust that they won't, because about half our research funds come from them. That's true.
You hope they won't cut the funds.
That's true. I think that so long as conclusions are scientifically sound, that they will be quite willing to accept them and will have no difficulty in, shall we say, removing funds from us.
Mm-hmm. Getting back to your studies, Dr. Castor, the figures that you have arrived at, if they are correct, which we assume they are, they could be pretty earth-shaking in a sense, couldn't they? I mean, they affect the whole world, right?
Well, particularly the Midwest, the area which we're living in, since the concentration here is, 22 millicuries per square mile in one term. In the rest of this latitude band, it's estimated to be closer to perhaps 16 millicuries, and in parts of South America, it drops much lower.
Are you planning to publish your findings in a scientific journal?
They've already been sent to the editor, yes.
Do you think the world of science will accept your findings?
They usually do accept anything which is sound.
Do you foresee any sort of a pitched battle between yourself and the AEC or with other scientists about the conclusions that you've reached, since they do differ so much from what is generally accepted?
Not at all. I think that we have a problem here that one group has with one type of background has obtained one set of data. They simply hadn't gotten around to sharing it with the rest of the scientific world as yet. And as soon as these data do become generally available, the thoughts and contributions of the rest of the world, of course, will be added to these in order to arrive at a right conclusion. I simply hope that I will stimulate a little thought in this direction, because I do honestly believe that we are much closer to a critical level than they're fully appreciated.
Okay. Well, now, next month, further tests, further atomic bomb tests, H-bomb tests, I'm not sure what they are scheduled in Nevada. How do you feel about those?
Well, I, of course, would be happy to see them called off. I have three small boys which are in the age group which are building their bones right now. And the rate things going, I fully expect that some 20 or 30 years from now, government agencies are going to be sending questionnaires around to my kids trying to check up on the incidence of bone cancer and things of this nature. If we had a safe source of calcium in our diet, which is free of strontium 90, I certainly would like to see my children get it.
Well, getting back to this question now, you've pointed out that we're already very close to the danger point. Another series of bomb tests, how much closer do we get as a result of it?
This is a type of calculation which does not lie in the biological field. This is something which Libby and the others are better able to calculate than I am.
But right now, we are planning a series of tests. The British are planning a series of tests. And, of course, the Russians could blow up a few bombs any old time. Do you feel that there's going to have to be a stop to it, or can we go on testing bombs?
Well, if my simple arithmetic is correct, all of this is going to add up, and the concentration is going to increase. From the end of 1955 to the end of 1956, Libby estimates, if I read its figures correctly, that the strontium content in the soil of the Midwest nearly doubled. So we're on a period of very rapid increase in strontium 90 and in strontium 90 hazard.
In the last 5 years, it doubled. In the last year, it doubled. We're now halfway to the danger point by your calculation. So if the content doubles again, would we be at 0 hour? Or is my arithmetic wrong there?
Well, I suppose there's always a hope that scientists can in some way pull the chestnuts out of the fire at the last minute. One thing which I am proposing is the possibility that we can remove strontium 90 from our food. After all, about 80% of our calcium intake comes from milk and milk products. It is quite feasible to decalcify milk using something like a water softener. And in this process, it has been demonstrated that strontium-90 is also removed. By adding calcium back to milk, a calcium which has come from limestone or other ancient source laid down long before man was around to play around with atom bombs, we could then have reconstituted milk with its calcium, but free of the strontium 90 hazard, and thus provide ourselves with a safe calcium intake, which after all is essential for proper bone growth and the growth of children, and still perhaps live in an area with fairly high fallout, but not suffer from the effects.
One thing still bothers me here, Dr. Castor. The AEC is currently operating on a maximum allowed concentration formula approximately 1,000 times higher than yours. And do you think that they're justified in doing so, or is this a rational approach on their part?
Well, it's quite rational, because as yet I haven't had a chance to communicate with them the full details of this. So they're working on the best of their information, yes.
You feel that the AEC should adopt your standards as soon as you send them to them?
Well, obviously I do. Otherwise, I wouldn't make the proposal in a rather obvious place, publishing it in a scientific journal that will be come available to the entire scientific world.
One final question, Dr. Castor, and I hope you can give us something on this. What can the average person listening to this broadcast do about this very severe problem that you've pointed out?
Well, I don't think there's anything that anyone can do at present. You certainly don't want to steer away from milk, because in the process of digestion, the cow has actually concentrated calcium and gotten rid of a certain amount of the radiostrontium in its fodder. In other words, the strontium to calcium ratio in the cow's body and in its milk is about a third of that in the fodder that went into it. So that milk is still our safest source of calcium as far as keeping a low strontium 90 intake is concerned. I think that technologically it will be possible to even decrease this further by the process I described. And perhaps within the next few years, we may make substantial gains in being able to learn to live in a world which is fairly highly contaminated with radiostrontium.
In other words, the prospect for the human race is not entirely black.
Well, it's looked black on many occasions in the past, but we always seem to survive, and I think somehow we'll learn to live in the atomic age as we have learned to live in some of the past. But it is going to take a great deal of careful work and thought at this time, because we're pushing a critical level very closely, and will be for the next few years.
Thank you very much, Dr. William O. Castor, Assistant Professor of Physiological Chemistry at the Medical School, University of Minnesota in Minneapolis. Now back to Howard Viken.
Oh,
where's
the dress?
Oh,
handkerchief. A mantle.
I would buy this whole building. Then I would say to her, take 2 rooms for the family, do anything you want with it.
And of course, the girl that was around said that take his down his history too. And of course, she asked him, are you married? No. Have you ever been married? Yes. That's the first time in a while I've ever been married. What are you doing now?
And he had some children, didn't he?
Yeah. Yes, he's got. Well, I don't know. Works on as a minister down in California. He's got about two sons. I don't know if he got the.
He's a minister.
Or my son's a minister. 7 years old then.
How old?
77.
Oh.
And we thought about getting some organized in some kind of a, you know.
77.
Birthday party or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And somebody there that could
given a biography or a life history of Al?
I think so.
And might all the his friends are all around mine at the area. There's quite a few more around there. Mac, down this one. I've seen the boy going to take care of his sister. Well, he was going to take care of her. Yeah.
I can't imagine that.
And then, of course, his son, of course, he treated him very nice, good and all that, but his son's wife, she was very hostile. I'm going to take that down Valva. There they got several card tables in the beer taverns there. And there they are. Well, Carlos is the same way. All the old guys, the same ones, they sit every afternoon.
We're in session.
And in session playing peanuts.
Hello? Yeah. Oh, yeah,
that's
right. You did? What kind were they?
Well, mostly relief. I'd say some relief. Mostly relief. Cases, some eviction. We never did have a foreclosure or any stuff in foreclosures here or not.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Probably near it. I don't know what time of the night it was. We heard a knock at the door. And Kleinschmidt came over there, see?
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't able to get my shoes on because that's a long chore with me. Fast enough to get down there, so he left and he went over to Fritz's place. And then, I don't know, I understood he left some money for telegrams or something.
Well, we was going to go. Weren't you alone? I think we were alone. You were alone next to me. We went over there, didn't we?
You were up to the place?
Yeah, we was over there. I know I was over to Grotten to see Summer come over there. And it's Kleinschmidt.
Yeah, I knew the people. Yeah.
They were going to be evicted from the farm. Two brothers were living together, and the banker and Drake wouldn't renew the lease on the farm. But the trouble there was that we had all making plans, you know, for stop eviction, and not that so much as a committee to go to see the banker, but. Broughton there, and I've seen this other guy, they got together first, and they went to see the banker first. And of course, the banker refused to renew their lease. And so Broughton says, well, if we won't renew the lease, no, well, he says, we'll just call the Holiday Association. My God, that stopped him right there. He wouldn't rent it out to that brother that he'd rented to before, but he just rented to his other brother. Didn't make any difference because they both lived in the same house anyway. But that stopped it, you know. We didn't have a chance to go through with
it. Well, telegrams to the governor and whatnot, and...
Well, that's possible. I don't remember that.
Yes.
Yeah,
just as good a moratorium as Langer, but you see... It didn't turn out that way. You know, it was only when the Holiday stepped in that the moratorium wanted anything. And this poor fellow that had the lease on the place, he had some nervous disease, you know, and he got bedridden for a couple of weeks just from the fact that he was going to be forced off the place. All he asked for was to stay there another year. They'd already seeded rye in the fall, you know, and they lose that, and they put in 60 acres of rye the fall. But after they got these telegrams, you know, well, we heard from Welford, and he had wired the banker, and the banker had agreed to stop proceedings and so forth. So we never got a chance to have any action there.
Well, he stopped there.
Some people we could rally that would come if we notified one or two.
The most active local was around here. And I don't know just how many we had in the local. I suppose probably 50, 60 on that. Yeah. Actually, that's actually members.
Some time, and
I wasn't there that time.
No, I wasn't there either. Arvin Olsen was there, and seems to me, you know, they paid out a certain amount of dues.
Yeah. Horning in on something.
Yeah. He was the state president of the Holiday Association at that time.
Oh,
you go around and know that's one way they get your dollar, and I think it's a dollar or 50 cents. Anyhow, they got the membership, and that's all it amounted to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the left got a hold, you know, and especially after, well, first before we had the United Farmers League, we had a local United Farmers League here, and
then later on when that solved that, then of course went into the Holiday Association, and it wasn't until then that the Holiday became a really fighting organization. Especially the Farmers League was already in existence before we came.
Yeah, well, what year was that? It was real early when they first started. Was it 32 or 3 or?
33.
Well, 33 is the one that you got in.
I believe it was 33.
Well, they asked about a year later. To one of the United Farmers League conventions, the convention, well, I think you were down the bill.
You know,
that was about in
the
34.
Was that?
Well, you say secretary. I was state secretary. Who was the state president? 30, 31 or something like that.
Oh, was that her?
She was here before we got in the move.
Yeah. So we didn't know her out here, see?
You didn't know her then?
Dark hallway up mine out there.
Who was there then?
It was
Harry Jewell and Axel Starr.
Axel Starr. They were having supper, we were frying some eggs. Sitting back in there looking at us, wondering if they could trust us. You know. They never asked us in. We never got in there. We stood in the doorway. We had to just produce credentials that we were all right, or else they wanted evidence to prove that we were really interested.
Well, it's kind of funny how a person gets into this, I guess, you know, I know. I quit school the first year of high school, I didn't like the darn. Well, there wasn't enough classes. I liked it, taking up some language course, I'm like Spanish, something like that, and never could. And there was interesting algebra, but then it was in the late 20s, it was early 30s, you know, it was tough times. And, well, you know, there's no crops here. So I remember the first time I went to bomb the ride in the freight bus. Well, of course, Bill and Norman had already gotten into the party then. And I'd seen some literature, but never given a thought about, you know, anything. Then I went to a fellow from South Dakota, went bombing rides on the freight, and went out to the eastern part of the state to get a job making potatoes. Well, we come a bit earlier for that, so we got in there with topping onions, so we went up to Grand Forks. And that's where I first got my lesson and really what the conditions were. There you had that bridge between Grand Forks and East Grand Forks, all full of men, you know, no work to get. But we were just lucky to get a job. Well, I left home with $7 and sir and we both were there in East Grand Forks picking potatoes, topping onions, for about 3-4 weeks. And when I got back to mine, I took the freight back to mine. And when I got back to mine, that's $7. So that's just how I made.
Yeah, done for
it. I didn't make a darn thing. Bought a several some underwear and then I come home broke. Yeah. After I saw that dog, had a little taste of it, hungry, you know, I just never could go and bum a meal from anybody. And a friend of mine, he was a creamer and he'd drink buttermilk. Well, I'd die first if I drink that. I remember the one morning there, we topped onions and we were still broke. We'd been buying some beans and stuff like that. Bread on the street, and then we had a party that night. We finished up the onions. We had a party and had a run across the road. There was a section of potatoes that had been picked. So we went out there and we found a few leftover potatoes, fried up potatoes. But some 8 of us there. And then went in town, got a pint or 2 pints of moonshine, and well, next morning there was no money left. We didn't have nothing anyhow. A mile from where we was topping onions. But there, we didn't have no money and we was going to top or pick potatoes for about 4 or 5 days from then. Well, I had to go on town and there was a friend of mine, he went to the creamer and bumped some buttermilk, you know. and I was hungry, and we got back to where we stayed, like, and we shack out in the country. I found an old potato, or a bread wrapper there. I found one crust of bread. I ate that. Well, that wouldn't go very long, so I have a watch I got from the folks. And so we went out to the place where we had our job, and I borrowed $2 from them for the tied us for, what, 3 days at $2. And we got the job.
A meeting at County Seat this summer, and we filled the place. We had one of the first organizers of the first organizer of the holiday from Wisconsin, and he was a minister. And he used to sing some religious songs or something, but, you know.
Remember his name?
No, that's, I was wondering if you did.
Collins. What was his first name?
Collins, his last name, huh?
Collins.
And, I didn't see him come in, and I didn't know who he was when he did come in, you see. And he noticed that the opposition had lined up two fire wagons outside there, you know, and unrolled the hoses and everything, you see. And he was a little cautious when he was speaking. Well, if we could have gotten to him a little sooner, you know, before he started speaking, I'd come to put it on full blast.
I wasn't there that time.
You see, Reverend Jones of Belva, you know, he was head of the relief at Belva here. That's the western part of the county here. And,
you know, I'll get you ladies on this also.
He's big,
talking in there.
His big job was to keep people from getting any relief, I guess. He had charge of it there. I know he had large amounts of bacon and cheese and whatnot, you know, and he kept it away from people so long until the worms started moving it around, see. And then he started giving it away in big quantities, you know, and he had called up Towner then when we had our county meeting to have every person on hand, you know, that's able, that was pretty husky to be there because Rocknecker were coming into town, see.
I can tell about the experience we had, that was pretty good. Bill wasn't there that time, it was Oregon.
Well, I was stuck halfway between here and Bismarck in a big rain, and we had to stop at a farm place there one night. I tried to make the meeting, but I couldn't.
Oh.
I didn't get there.
We had
Bismarck.
We had a meeting down there in Bell one time. We had meetings several different places. We had a petition drawn up, you know, and that is addressed, you know, to the County Relief Center. How much coal, what we need, supply we need for the winter. So much coal, so much groceries, so many dollars for the groceries, and clothing and so on. And we're going to have a meeting down in Balboa. And I happened to be at there, we were kind of promised the Farmers Union service station there. So we'd advertised for a meeting down there in Oregon, and I went down there. And my dad's cousin was used to be in the Socialist Party and all that. Was rave just anti-communist as could be, you know. And he had the Brian Crean there at the Farmers Union station there, so he kind of talked him into not letting us have him being there. So another service station man came over and told him, well, we had a meeting over his service station. We couldn't get a meeting hall. So we had over there, and there must have been about 3 dozen guys around there come in, and Orban started talking, you know, and talking about the relief situation and all that, what we were there for. And so on. And finally, this cousin of my dad's come in, and my gosh, he says, well, don't want to listen to these guys here because they're communists. And then beside him, saying that, then we had the stupid in for this year, Reverend Jones, at the meeting there. But you know, well, Orban didn't say much anymore, and by God, we had another fellow step up from Galva there. And he says, by God, what this guy's talking about is okay. And you know, before, look, well, this guy, they just raked him with the coals. And, you know, one thing, one mistake we did make at that meeting, because this year, stupid in for Reverend Jones, he said that he came out that and admitted after a while that he was
Julian.
Yeah,
shrimp.
Yeah. But the mistake we made there was that we didn't get Jones down there, and we figured that there was some meeting of our meeting there, that's the people on there, we wasn't going to have everything to answer. But that's what we should have had him there, because they really could have handled him. But boy, there's nobody like that guy.
Yeah, he found out what his own neighbors thought of him, if he'd been there.
There's one meeting, by gosh, that we didn't have to do a darn thing. The people there, they handled that situation very good. It might be like that situation there, where we should have had to invite that guy there and then put him on the spot. No, because
sure.
We wouldn't have to do anything ourselves at all, because the people there, they would have
taken care of him
themselves. It would have been a lot better.
You know, I don't think it was because the party went too far. They used poor tactics.
But continues like that.
Good playing.
On the field land, you were the first one to plow it, weren't you?
I didn't, because most of the land was already broke up, a good share of it anyway. By the time I come up here, I broke up some on my dad's land there, but on the land that I bought, that was already broke up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All the trees you see around.
Mm-hmm. It was a treeless. Go ahead. Oh
yes, there was a place that you could find as much even as a shrub was done along Mouse River. Mm-hmm. That was natural trees, you know, along the river. But that's the only place.
Mm-hmm.
Of these. There were a few small trees, up in the coolest in the hills, you know,
mm-hmm.
Some small shrub and stuff. But the regular trees, you know, you couldn't see a tree here. Or the hilly, rough country there, you know.
They met here.
Yeah. They never met in Norway. They didn't. They lived in different parts. Standing Rock.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I went up and drew a number on that.
You did?
Yeah. Standing Rock and a reservation up in Montana. What was the name of that? Standing Rock. That's the. That's here. Done by Mark, isn't it, North Dakota? Or, no, that. That isn't the name of that one. My number was never, wasn't drawn, you see. Exactly, you see, we went up and registered, and I suppose they put the names then, I suppose, because there was only a certain amount of land, you know, a certain amount of quarters that was open up, you know. I don't remember now what, to register, that wasn't much, I guess a couple of dollars or something like that. But if you was lucky enough then that your number was drawn, then you had to pay so much naked for the land, you see. You still had to kind of the same thing as homestead. You had to live on it just the same. But I don't remember now what it was, $1.25 of an acre or something like that. And then you had to pay a fourth of that down, I think, at the time that you kind of filed. And the balance, I think, in 4 or 5 years, well, in 4 or 5 payments, times more people that drew, you know, than what there was land for, you know.
Oh.
If you just happen to be lucky, I suppose I don't know just exactly how they did it, but I suppose they done it about in the same way as any other lottery. I suppose that you they put the numbers. Each name got the number, you see.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose in rotation as they from one and up as they registered. When the registration was over, well, then I suppose they They put them, I suppose the names and the numbers was on the slip, I suppose they put them in their box or something, you know, and drew out, kept on drawing out as, mine, not the ones. Now, I can't remember the names of these reservations now. That they're out by the Missouri here, is that the one they call Standing Rock? No, that is the Berthold Reservation, isn't it? I thought the Standing Rock was down in the southern part. That was my nut. They moved them, I guess, they kind of in a certain place of a certain...
Another place they didn't want yet.
Yeah, I suppose so, because, they were, I don't know, they might have been scattered all over the reservation there, but you see, the reservation is pretty big, you know, and this kept on for many days, you know,
mm-hmm.
coming and going all the time. Of course, from Minnesota, I knew well from the time we lived down there, and they were up here visiting, but they had no intention of going up there to register, you know, for land. But just for the dickens of it, you know, they went up there anyway. And by gosh, one of them wasn't lucky enough to draw, you know. But I don't think she ever went up there because she never had the intention of going up there anyway. You know, took it away from somebody else, you know. But then, of course, it didn't really take it away from anybody else because it wasn't like Haver, Montana, though.
Wasn't it? Haver was worse.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I heard a lot about Haver. That was a really tough time. Used to be the first years. There wasn't so many cowboys around, right around here, you know, there wasn't any. Around the Mouse River, they raised a lot of cattle there, but then it wasn't big cattle ranches like they had up in Montana.
What?
Well, that never was. Never was legal until now when...
It was a dry. It was supposed to be illegal to...
Well, it was legal in a way. You could ship in, you could ship it in, you could send for it. But you couldn't sell it here.
Oh.
Because they had it, you know, to Minnesota.
Oh.
Minnesota was wet, you know, and all the eastern states, you know, they were wet.
So that?
4th of July celebrations. They used to celebrate the 4th of July in Velva. There was a fellow, Brian Bigger, you probably remember him too. Maybe you were moved out of Minot at that time. For a band of Louis Stearns, do you remember him?
I think I saw him in the paper though.
No, he moved to Minot many years ago, and he started to share Stearns' garage up there. Handled four cars and got a big garage, because he's dead now. But he made his start in Velva, blind picking, and he used to ship for 4th of July. He used to ship in a whole carload, you know, of beer. Well, it was against the law, you know, but one that I ever was to mine up to here was Brian when he was running.
Brian? Oh, did you hear Brian?
Yeah. Listen to him. He's a good speaker.
Oh.
I could have listened to just to hear him talking. I could have listened to him all night.
Yeah.
Everybody was sorry that. I suppose he spoke probably an hour, hour and a half, but then it didn't seem to be just a few minutes, you know. Remember that? That time.
Oh, was he?
Yeah. And I can't remember who he was running against. Exactly like his picture, the picture that I have seen of him, you know. He spoke kind of plain language and a fellow very good to understand him, you know. They, mm-hmm. He didn't use any big words or
anything
to me.
I don't know, I met a man
too. He never was able to make it. I remember your dad. Well, I don't know if I ever, can't remember that I ever saw him, but I believe I did. I must have. You know, them days, you know, they, well, pretty near the whole county here, you know, was socialist.
I was true in many counties.
Yeah, there's McKinley County was practically the whole state, the whole county. There was very few that wasn't.
Well, he must have spoken around here.
You know, I remember the name of the sewer well, you know, and there's another fellow that he used to come down to Bergen here and speak. I'm pretty sure your dad was down here too. There's another fellow, I can't think of his name. He was from Mina. No, he's one of the socialists. Probably one.
What was it?
Who come to treasure.
Oh.
Well, they put me on, you know. And I don't remember now how many. I never went out. I'd never done anything for it. I never went out. There was 20 candidates that year. And the library, you know, and the socialist books and...
Where was the library?
Well, yeah, I was in Bergen at that time. The library was my store. get elected too because I had a store and I didn't want to be on the ticket, but local there they were the ones that put me on there, and because I would have been stuck if I should have.
Better
that. Oh, I don't remember now, but I think they must have met about once a month, and then they used to have some speakers. Then you see, and there's one fellow that lived around here. He's one of the northwest of here, about 4 or 5 miles. He was a good speaker, you know, and he used to come down here and talk, you know. Well, they were really strong socialists, some of them. There's a bunch south of Bergen, and then there's a few northeast of Bergen. I don't think they're right in the territory around Bergen. I don't think there wasn't over 3 or 4 of them, you know, that was against them, and one of them was one of the storekeepers in Bergen there, and he finally had to turn because he was losing his trade, so he turned socialist too, just on his trade. I mean, he ever voted socialist, but he turned socialist anyway, and then he was such a strong socialist, I must say. In order to get back some of his customers.
Is Jack Benny?
He's 69.
He started to get socialists to get the last fall.
Oh, only that? Well, doesn't it work like...
I was already 68 at the time. Mm-hmm. I got to be 69 this winter, so I lost out 3 years. But I had to pay social security tax for 2 years, you know. See that law for the farmers didn't go into effect until 55, you see, and I had to pay I had to pay Social Security tax for both 55 and 56, you see,
mm-hmm.
for 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
In a house, but like if a person had to rent the house, you couldn't get a loan, you know, and live.
Mm-hmm.
If we didn't happen to have that house in Bergen there, of course we could have stayed on a farm, you know, but then if we wanted to move to like to Valvon and rent a house there, we couldn't rent a house less than $50 a month, I suppose. They couldn't make it, you know, and it's supposed to farming.
Yeah.
No, that's it, and I was supposed to retire then, you see, I was supposed to rent out then. Mm-hmm. Earn up to $1,200
a
year. And still draw your Social Security. But if you make more than that, then you'll be cut off some of your Social Security then, say.
If you make 60?
But after you're 72, then you can make any amount then.
Oh,
you
can
go out and make $1 million if you want. Still,
oh, well. Yeah. You're free then.
they should pay them enough so they could get along on and then retire them entirely so not allow them to even go out and work or earn anything outside them, because I suppose the law in the first place was really meant to take the older people out of work and make room for younger ones. That's
mm-hmm.
really what it's not so I could save up and things.
Somebody else was getting it. The wheat do you think you've raised five?
Oh, I haven't raised so very many. I don't kept track. I've owned the farm on a small scale all the time, so ever since I started farming on my own home. The most wheat that I ever had, even to start with, I started renting, and the most wheat I ever did raise was 150 acres in a year, you see. And crop during the years that I farmed, well, I could count them years easy on one on the fingers and one hand, and still have a few left over.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Isn't that
I started out in the first crop I had when I started out after I quit Stormbergen. First crop I had was in 19. 19 was nothing, 20 there was nothing, 21 was nothing, and 22 there was fair crop, 23 there was nothing, 24 wasn't so bad, 25 is really the best crop that I had, 25 and 28, 26 was nothing. In 26 I passed 75 bushels of wheat. And in 27 there was nothing, very little. In 28 it was pretty good. And 29, it wasn't much again, you see. And then during the 30s there was nothing, you see.
The drought?
Yeah. Didn't raise, get hay or anything, you know, corn or anything. So I think I could, I think I could easily count the years on the fingers of one hand, and still have anyway 1 or 2 years to go on to extra and
plant it.
Between the 40 and 50, you know, that there's some pretty good crops. Because I didn't have enough land either, you see, when there was good years, so, and there, and along there where we lived, and you couldn't rent an acre of land.
Well, you can't tell when the good years are going to be either.
Mm-hmm.
Or the good prices,
but
even
now,
if you have a crop.
No, it don't make much difference because you can't put anything in anywhere.
But
yeah, just now since they started to set the price for the wheat, so we could get a pretty good price for the wheat, and then happen to strike getting on their rain years, where we got pretty good crops, and still I never had any crop to Mountington, that is, as far as the yield is concerned. Because I had too little land, I had to put in about the same land put in all the time, you know. So I got to run out, you know. That I never had an average of over 12, 14 bushels to the acre. Except in 1925, that year my wheat averaged 25 bushels, but then the land was pretty good because it hadn't been farmed the year before. That is the first crop I had on that land that we've been living on to move to Berlin. Just laid over, you see, 1 year, and made that much difference.
Mm. Between 12 and 25 bushels.
Yeah.
But you couldn't afford to do that. You didn't have enough land to afford
to. No, I had to put in everything, you know. Of course, this last year I've been trying to summer follow. Some every year. Well, on summer fallow, that's pretty good, you know. The summer fallow land, that's going as high as 25 bushels, all right. But I never had land enough, so I could raise wheat only on summer fallow. I had to use old land too. So when you and the old land, you see, cut down the average so much that the average, I'm sure it didn't amount to over, not over 14, 15 bushels anyway, the average. And, but then you've got to have more machinery too, then. So.
Yeah.
Basement? Yes, we don't dig them up.
They went out, I think.
No.
Oh, that sun was shining for a moment, now it's gone.
Yeah, it rained.
I went through here
then at 5 o'clock in the morning, and just getting light.
Mm-hmm.
It was about the 20th of May, I think it was.
There was many loss of life?
No, but there was small buildings, 75 barns between Russo and here. They came between, well, I guess the tornado, I guess, went as far as up by Towner. Came to catch a fish, and when it started crawling up over in northwest, and then after a while, then it started thundering and lightning. And, to start with, it didn't look bad, but after a while, then it started to crawl up pretty bad, and I was afraid it was going to be hail, you know. And, so I started out trying to make it down to the highway before it would start, you know. I wasn't able to make it. I made it within about a mile and a half, about 2 miles. And when the rain come, you know, and it just poured down, and hard wind. I couldn't see a thing. I had a windshield wiper going, you know, and I couldn't see the hood of the car, you know. But this here come down hard now. There was a few hails in it, but not very many. And the French is doing.
Well, it's good to see you.
Yeah. How long are we going to stay here?
Oh, a couple of days, I think.
No. Yeah, we're come down and see us.
Yeah, I'd like to do that. And they can feel their true feelings. I mean, it's so hard. But I don't know, I've got to get some good records of women.
I was just trying to think of. Can you
have... Like the livestock and graining cattle and the cows and all that. We've never had enough to put in about 15 acres of oats and what we could put in. Always had to put in so much wheat because... Well, most of the time, one place we were renting from, then where he's getting only half share, and had nothing to say about how much crop over should be put in, you know, on wheat or anything else. And then, only the other place, you know, they bought there, it was on a cash basis, and they put in all wheat, in order to raise $400 the first year's $400 cash rent.
Was that it?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that I could still have one or two feet of left
if you were going to say a good crop and he'd say good crop here, you know, we can get 20 bushels an acre, you know, that's what you
would. Well, you
has had up to 30 bushels an acre. And they could do, you know, on some of our own. About 150 average.
Yeah, the land is running out, you know. You can't summer fall like someone that can summer fall, well, at least a third every year. Some of them can summer fall a half.
Well, if you have land, you know, like you see a little land that Edison, he lives in. He's got 500 acres of land. But now, he's allowed to seed 180 acres of wheat. Mm-hmm. Well, for many years now, he's been, because he's renting out, he can rent on the farm, and he's put in the limit in wheat, 180 acres, but then he's been summer following 180 acres every year, you see.
Yes.
And then he takes one crop of wheat, in the old summer fallow, and then in the summer fallow 180 acres. Then in next year, he's got the 180 acres of summer fallow for wheat, and then he had wheat on this year, he seeds in the flax. He's got about 180 acres of flax every year, you know, and that way he's got good land on that.
Yeah.
He can get good land, a good average.
Well, that's the trouble when you get enough land.
It's nothing put back into the land, you know. You've got to either let the land lay or else summer fallow. If you just change crops from one to the other, that isn't going to help anything. It's less than half a section, you know, to a farmer. If they got half a section right from the start, you know, they could have made it. Right from the start too, but you know, the first settlers here, you know, they went broke.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have land enough at all, because the wheat prices then days, you know, wasn't much. How about that man? He had a lot of help, you know, a lot of boys. There's six of us boys.
That was free labor,
yeah. Yeah, well, that's the way with them fellows around, them Russians around Carson, you know. If it wasn't for their free labor, they couldn't have made it either, but most of them are big farmers, you know. But they got big families, you know, a lot of help. And up here, he bought, let me see, how many was the land that he bought up there? He bought three, four,
eight, how much is the work we got there?
Well, that he's actually bought, because I didn't
and the boys go on back, you know. but what he actually bought, well, he had four quarters of home there, and then Larimer placed out three quarters, that's six quarters, and then Edwin's quarter, seven, and that John Rupert for them, it's eight quarters that he bought.
Well, I got on board Alfred's too, the one time, didn't he?
Well, John was up there.
Nine quarters. Nine
quarters. That's
what I bought. Then he bought that other quarter, another quarter there, wasn't there?
The first quarter that he bought here, he paid only $500 for that. The next two quarters, in the same section, he paid $5,000 for. And from then on, then he paid pretty big price. And the sporting team was then to start with, you know, because he had any tackles come out, and of course he had to, but he bought a tractor too, then you see, because he never did run the tractor himself. He didn't have that much tractor machinery himself, you know, after Dan had divided up the boys. They want to stay home. He started my up packing machinery. Excuse.
Why was that?
82, 83?
Yeah, I'm
there.
All right.
Good. All the time. I've been out. Last couple of years, he didn't come up here. And he's done the cooking. Truly, my mother died, she died in 22. And so he was in cooking. Him and one of my brothers stayed home in the bathroom. Until the last year, then they had been married. In Adelaide, that is our nearest town, is 9 miles. But, and see,